This is the 1895 podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club, and we are brought to you by Go Loud. Go Loud is the home of Irish podcasts. Back to winning ways. The Reds are back. Did we ever go away? No, probably not. Hello, Ben. Sorry. Wait. Late substitution. Ben can't be here. So we have the next best thing. And that next best thing, is he going to be a Harry Wood and Derry type substitution? Is he going to be a Stanley and a Bonham type substitution? Time will tell, but thank you for joining me, Darren Cleary.
Aaron O'Driscoll against Pat's substitution, I think.
Before we start recording, what did you tell me you wanted to do on this podcast today? What kind of performance were you looking for?
I said I just wanted to keep things ticking over, you know, just keep the podcast going so that when Ben is fit again, he can jump straight in. So I am the Sam Bone to Ben's Paddy Bart.
How has your Shelburne week been?
Great. Yeah, I have to say, thoroughly enjoyable weekend. Two wins from two. The win on Friday was particularly enjoyable because it upset all the wrong people. So the good guys were happy on Friday night and the bad guys were very sad.
It was a victory for the good guys on Friday. No, I have no doubt in my mind about that. It was a weird one. Kind of felt like a long time coming, but at the same time, I think a lot of people were panicking a little bit. Maybe not within the club, but maybe from outside, a few people starting to throw little remarks out. You know, there's their one run at a league title gone. You know, they'll do well to get into Europe this year, blah, 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 blah. But what a way to do it. 90 minutes on the clock. A bald Scotsman pops up. Doesn't get much better than them moments, does it?
It was magic. And I think it probably wasn't highlighted too much in the build-up, but the amount of pressure on that game is inordinate for this time of season. Like, it's so early in the season to have a game with that much pressure. If that turns into a third loss in a row, irrespective of the circumstances, irrespective if we dominate for 90 minutes, have six penalty appeals turned down, miss four balls off the line, doesn't matter. People just remember the result. And if you have three losses in a row, it puts a sickening amount of pressure on going to Daily Mount. It ruins this entire week. And then I couldn't even say what it would mean for then the Monday against Drogheda, if God forbid. Like, it's mad to think the sliding door is moments in football and in life, because that win just changes the perception. Even though when we were having a few bad results, aside from Derry and, you know, a bit of the Waterford game early on, I don't actually think we played really bad over the last few weeks. I thought we were very good in Talla. I thought we were good in Talca against Galway. I thought we were brilliant against Drogheda, but we just didn't win the games. Like, it's mad to think there were games last year where we weren't great, but just edged it 1-0 and got out of Dodge. And until you watch those games back, you don't realise, like, how much the team has gone on. Like, we're playing such better football now than we were at this time last season, I think.
We are. It's a better kind of, we're more well-rounded. We're more, it's a mad thing to say, but we look more like champions now. Like, we're dominating teams, we're playing teams off the park at times. And look, kind of after the Bowls win, we had that run of the 3-2-2s. And as you said, like, we were playing really well and we still had something to show for, even though, like, point at home to Galway, point away to Drogheda. Really, at that stage, the way those teams were going, they weren't disastrous results. Neither was going to Talla and claiming a point, but think it turned a little bit when we went up to Derry and then obviously home to Waterford then. Think a few people were starting to go, right, at least we were picking up bits and pieces in the last couple of games. Now we've nothing to show for out of 6 points. But is it a bit dramatic to maybe say that could be like a turning point in the season for us? Is it too early to say that?
No, I think it was like a season-defining game. No one really wanted to say it. Like, it's easy to say now because you win, but if you lose, you're probably trying to play down the significance. But the significance of 3 losses in a row is pretty big in a league that's so tight and that we've always been good at getting something out of games. Like, I don't think we've lost 3 games in a row since Duffer's first year. So it's a massive win for a few different reasons. And I do think, like, particularly the way we won it, I think that can be a turning point. I think we played better in Drogheda. I think we played better in Tala, and we didn't get anything for those games. Like, we got a point, but we didn't win them. I don't think we were anywhere near as good as we have been in recent weeks on Friday night, but we found a way to win. And whisper it, that the mark of champions in my mind.
It is 100%. I couldn't help but get that feeling of kind of doom when we conceded, because I actually thought we started the game quite well. Pat's kind of got on top then and then hit us with the sucker punch. Again, part of it, the making of our own demise. But I did think that's the first time I kind of felt like, not that we were unlucky, but it was an amazing finish, like an unbelievable finish. There's not many centre forwards in the league that put that away, but we can say it because I asked Kerr in his interview and he backed it up that there was kind of a feeling of, oh no, here we go again.
Yeah, there was, particularly because it reminded me a bit of the goal we gave away in Derry. I know it's probably Sam Bone took a lot of stick for that goal, but comes from a bad ball from JJ, and Pat's pick up possession from a bad ball from JJ as well. So it did feel like we'd kind of, again, just weren't being careful enough with the ball in that area of the pitch. But the way we rallied was really good. And I said this to you early in the game, I think it was yourself. I said, Pats are soft, like, can get at them. Like, they don't really seem to like it when you get in their face and they've conceded late goals. And as long as we don't get a second here, we're still in the game. And I definitely felt that had we have scored, we'd have a chance to really get at them. And that's what happened.
Do you know, they might be the first team. No, it's the second time this year that I've looked at an opposition and gone, they are soft. And it was me, you said it to you, and that's probably the perfect word. They looked a bit vulnerable or something. Bowles would have been the other team when we bet them 1-0. That kind of when you score, you go, oh, here. Like, you know, we probably have them scoring so quick after half time. I think completely put them on the back foot, scoring in hilarious circumstances as well. But the one of the things I want to get across about that first goal, and I can't find the graphic. I don't know whether the league put it up or one of those League of Ireland statos had it up, but the amount of passes in the build-up to that goal, and I know, look, I've complained about it on here, about not getting the ball into the box, like not just whipping the ball in. We went from one side to the other, back across, slipped Evan Caffrey in down the side, and a little... Well, it was a great ball across the box. He took every single defender out with that cross to Evan Caffrey, who has been unbelievable. Harry Wood there for the finish. That feels like the type of a goal that the likes of a Rovers would have scored a few years ago, if that makes sense. Like, really dominating, moving teams around, coming up with a bit of quality when we've needed it, which we've probably lacked in the last few weeks. And we actually made it look quite easy, I thought.
We don't score goals like that. It's a bit mad, like you say, moving the team around side to side, a lot of passing. The finish is quality, and I think in the build-up, it's probably forgot how hard it is to kind of get on the end of that and just steer it in the right direction. Like, it's brilliant movement from Harry, but how often do you see us recycle that ball back out and not gamble and not flash it across to go, no, I'll actually put it back to my fullback here and let him pull it back to our centre half. And you can tell that like, we're trying to find that balance of recycling possession, keeping the ball, but also having a little bit of cutting edge when it's worth the gamble. And that was a gamble that was worth it. And Evan had another one in the second half that could have paid off. Meepo very close to getting on the end of it. And there's another one against Waterford, I think it was Evan again, That again, he flashes that there. If there's someone there, luckily it was Harry Wood this time around. But it's a really good goal to score because it just kind of shows that, you know, we don't have to score the same goal every time. Like, it doesn't have to be a well-worked set piece. It doesn't have to be a big build-up play. It doesn't have to be a mad shot from outside of the box and hope for the best. It showed a bit of variety, I guess, to what we're doing, because I can't recall a goal like that this season.
No, there's plenty of ways to skin a cat, as the man says. You might be able to answer this better than anyone. I've seen a lot of nonsense online. Obviously, the manager made the two early changes against Waterford. He made three at halftime on Friday, which worked really, really well. A lot of people kind of point towards, that's a bit of panic. You know, Duffer's panicking, he's starting to just do mad stuff. But, like, is that just... Does that kind of sum the manager and the staff up of being so proactive and saying, here, this is not happening. There's no point waiting for 10 minutes after halftime. There's no point waiting 15 minutes till halftime. Let's just fucking make the changes, get it done, and try and change the game.
I think there's a big chunk of humility there in being able to see that the team that has been picked hasn't performed the way you'd like. Like, some managers would stick it out and play them no matter what. Like, we've been seeing times at the Reds duty where players that were signed, irrespective of how junk they were in years gone by, played every week despite the fact they were rubbish, Carl Shepherd being top of that pile. So to be able to say, right, this isn't working, I'm making changes, I make three changes, I don't think it's losing his mind. I don't think it's this whole thing of, you know, I saw someone else saying, it's throwing players under the bus by hooking them. But if they're not playing well, like, what do you want to do? Persist to 60 minutes and hope they'll start playing well. Like, it's, to be fair, it's not a done thing, but that's not to say it's not the right thing to do. You know, you don't see it very often, but that's not to say, like, it's not the thing to do. I think it shows ability to accept that this, maybe the tactic or the player isn't what you'd like to see out there and hasn't worked the way you'd like, so you're going to change it. Like, I think it's a bit of brave management, to be honest.
Yeah, I think great credit needs to go to the players as well. Obviously, it was JJ and Ellis that were whipped off against Waterford. JJ obviously started against Pats. Ellis came on and was really good when he came on. Caused a bit of mayhem up there. So it's worked all the way around, really. Like, our performance did get an awful lot better in the Waterford game. We made the changes. We were way better in the second half, obviously, against Pats. The goal, the winner. The manager always talks about, like, those big moments. And I remember when he came in first, he was talking about he'd waited so long to have, like, a last-minute winner in Tolka. That was one of my favourite ones there's been. One of my favourite late goals. It was just, the roof nearly came off the Riverside. The noise was unbelievable. It was some of that kind of pandemonium celebrating. It was just, it was carnage all over. They're the moments you do it for, really, aren't they? Because we have enough shit that when something like that comes along, it's no better feeling.
That's amazing. And look, I don't see much of it now, but like in years gone by, you would have got the celebration police. Felt like they were very busy last year. They were constantly giving out about, Shell's going on, like they won the league. But we actually end up winning the league. So you look stupid now, not us. But like, there was a time where, like, you were accused of, you know, over-egging a celebration. Like a 90th minute winner in a Dublin derby at home, when you're under pressure, it's not like we were, you know, cakewalking to our eighth win in a row. Like, we needed to win that game for a few different reasons, for points, for momentum, for everything. And the celebrations were fitting. And to be fair, what I would say is, like, football is very reactive and fans can get really negative over very little. Like, how easy it is to unnerve the Bows fans is amazing, because if they win, they're shit. If they lose, they're really shit. And if they draw, they're still shit. Like, they seem to be the most reactive fan base in the league for kind of negativity. But our fans, even when we weren't having great results, playing well but not having great results, there was no sense of a wobble. There was no sense of anything pressure in the stand. So it was a lovely moment because the people deserved it. Like they, that's the kind of thing that you toil through the bad days for that 20 seconds after the net ripples.
But you know what? The crowds celebrating, that never really bothers me. Like, geez, you're a football fan. Of course you're going to celebrate your team scoring or winning or whatever it might be. But I felt the players and the manager were very muted after. And look, we've seen the manager kind of, especially against Pats, he has kind of given it the big one before, after beating them. But it was mad because there was so much emotion when we scored. But then like the players were very calm afterwards. There was no real making a big song and dance of it. It was just, right, we got that win, let's move on. And I do want to mention, after the game, there's no grimmer place to be than when you've conceded a last-minute winner away to what you deem to be your biggest rival and you get held back. It's the worst feeling in the world. But there was some generational golden going on after that game. It was just enjoyable.
How has no one ever thought that, well, if we just stay back for another 10 minutes, then I don't think I've ever seen that before at a game. I don't know, maybe I'm just naive, but like, I've never seen that of like, nah, we're just going to stay here, keep singing, and then the longer we're here, the longer they're here. And it wasn't even it was just like taunting. It wasn't even, it was like L2 on SmackDown versus Raw 2004.
Yeah,
constantly taunting. They're not even doing anything back. They're just standing there, miserable, unhappy, not even rising to it. It's not like it's, you know, two sets of fans chanting at each other.
Just, they're just so silent.
Sat there getting verbally bullied for 15 minutes.
The only thing that could have made it better was if it was raining. That would have just been the cherry on top of the icing on the cake. But no, it was magical. I was made aware today as well of this, and I found it really, really funny because I got a really funny image in my head. Where my dad and brother stand, it's kind of between the new stand and the riverside, just on the terrace there. And my dad was telling me that there was a group of Norwegian lads standing behind them who were at, I think he said they were on a stag or something like that. So they obviously done what a lot of people do and took in a local game, but they realised...
Schoberg.
Yes.
The fella in the shack.
They realised, that like, hang on, this fella's Norwegian. And it turned out that the club he came through was the club they supported. So my dad said they just gave him dog's abuse for the whole game. But they kept saying that they weren't swearing. They're like, no, we just get in his head. We're like speaking to him in Norwegian. But I mean, they were running down to the barrier, giving up both barrels. Like, and he was absolute shite as well, their right back. So maybe a little assist for a Norwegian stag, but imagine, right? That's the equivalent of like me or you being a professional footballer. We end up in Norway playing like in a kind of obscure league, and you're playing the game. Next thing, there's a group of about 10 or 12 Irish lads slagging you in Irish.
Yeah, that ain't a manifold calling you big bag of dog shite.
Like, there's no way that wouldn't throw you off, because you definitely hear it. It'd stand out over the rest of the noise.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Like, I remember, like, he was at it for the whole game. I remember seeing one of them in particular. There was a fella in a shacket, and every few minutes, anytime there was a throw-in or anyone was near that side of the sideline, he would run down, jump in the barrier, lose his marbles. Like, it wouldn't even have to be a contentious call. It'd be like a throw-in or like just us moving the ball around. And I was like, I think I was Carl Watson beside me. I was like, Carl, what is this fella's like deal? Like, he's just irrationally angry at one player, at Pats. He's like, this mad. So we just watched him for the next few minutes. He's like, imagine getting bullied by a fella in a shacket.
I can see him saying it as well.
Yeah. Oh, he gave him death. And then at one stage, like, he turned around to Joe Redmond and he was like, what's this about? He was so confused. Like, he's gone to talk and someone's abused him in Norwegian.
Oh, Joe Redmond, who famously was calling out children after the game for a scrap. But look, we'll just enjoy our victory. We'll be the bigger people here.
I say allegedly on that one, dude, just in case Joe Redmond's solicitors are listening.
Yeah, true. Allegedly. The new fan zone. I would have loved nothing more than to indulge, but being ever the professional volunteers as we are, Dazzler, we couldn't. But how did it go down? What are you hearing? What's the reaction been?
Seems to be very positive. Like, generally, if something's bad, you'll know about it. If the sentiment is off, you'll know about it. So sometimes no news is good news in League of Ireland land. And like, I think people just enjoyed the novelty of being able to have a pint in the sun. I think there's a quiet appreciation for like the physical confines and footprint. Our Talca are maybe difficult to work with at times, but there's a genuine ambition from people running the club to improve it and improve the match day experience and make it better for people. Credit as well to the bar. The bar had Jamie Duffin. So I think that kind of way of running it, like complimentary, where you don't have to go to the fan zone or the bar. You can support both depending on what part of the ground you're in. You're just trying to have facilities where people are. And the bar have done amazing work in putting on entertainment and making that a destination. But also having something at the other side of the ground as well means that people who physically can't fit in or won't get a pint in time have an option. So I think it's brilliant. I think it's the big thing is that, like anything, the licensing laws are so strict in Ireland, particularly on sporting events and particularly on football, that they'll obviously watch it, the guard security, very, very closely. I'm not saying they'll be looking for any reason to cancel it, but I mean any kind of issues, and it's the easy one to make the scapegoat. So I think people enjoying it is great. I think people making the most of it's brilliant, but just can't believe I'm going to say this. Enjoy it responsibly. Jesus Christ, you sound like a drink away rat.
God, yeah. I know. That's desperate. I think the fact that people were looking for a spare wristband to get into the fan zone in Talca, that is just not something I thought I'd ever say.
Yeah, someone asked.
And that person knows who he is. He knows who he is. And when the boot was on the other foot, he didn't know how to react.
I sorted him though. There was another one who'd gone on, and I said, I don't have any. He goes, well, you just sorted this person out, so I know you have some.
Oh no.
God bless you. You know, you've got me between a rock and a hard place, but I actually don't have one, so good luck to you. Apply. Fill out your form when you get your email.
Firm but fair. The good weekend, the good results continued into Saturday, Dazzler. A 2-1 win for Owen Wearin's team. The team just know when to score. It's a mad kind of knack they seem to have picked up. But obviously scoring early enough on Saturday, were pegged back then, and you kind of go into halftime a little bit nervy, not really sure how the game's going to go. And then bang, 5 minutes after halftime, 2-1, saw the game out. It's another, me and Ben tipped that as a must win. Another case of job done, really.
Yeah, very much so. Like, it's a brilliant win. It's one where, like, this league is so cruelly short. You don't have a whole lot of options not to win your games. I think we're away now from Talca for a good few weeks. So, like, home form is going to be really, really, really important. To be in that position, a point off, you probably say it is a two-horse title race now. It's ourselves and Athlone. I think we're perfectly poised. But the difficult thing is, like, there's no room for, the stakes are so high, like, there's no room for drop points. Every goal, every free kick, every corner could genuinely change the course of the season. So probably, like, it's one of the most exciting and interesting sporting events in the country. It's not just like women's sporting events, it's sporting events, because that jeopardy is always there. And like, you go back to the 2021 season, like, that was just the maddest end to a climax of a season anyone can ever remember. Even the next year, like, going to Wexford for all the marbles, winner takes all, that was absolutely bonkers. So it's thrown up some serious entertainment over the years, and cult legends like people like Noel, Pearl, Rachel. The quality of Rachel's ball is, I don't know if you'll see one as good
for that was ridiculous.
The rest of the season. It's outrageous.
That's ridiculous. The way it passed was just unbelievable. We often we'll talk about the finishes so much, but that pass, and I think it was Alex Kavanagh for the other one, just ridiculous. That's just a pass that I would say 99% of players don't even see it, let alone be able to execute it. So, yeah, it's not often the assists trump the finish, but definitely in that case it did.
But you they're doing it. Yes. So you can see it, that's great. You mightn't have the speed of thought to try it, but seeing it is a skill in of itself. Trying it and failing, it's like, oh, well, look, you saw an amazing pass, you went for it. To actually execute it so well, so that the finish was nearly easy once the ball landed. It's outrageous. Goals like that generally don't get the goal of the season. They tend to be like so-called worldies from 30, 40 yards, but that's as good a goal as you'll see in any league this year.
And hopefully there'll be more of them on Saturday. We travel to Wexford, to your homeland, Dazda, your new homeland. It's a 6 o'clock kickoff, so a bit later on in the evening. But Wexford will go into that knowing if they can win, it puts them right back in amongst it. There's just so little room for error, as you mentioned. So much at stake all the time. But hopefully we can get the job done Saturday. At Lone, travel to Sligo, I think. So you'd be expecting 3 points there. But look, who knows? 6 o'clock on Saturday. It'll be live on LOI TV if you can't make it. All the better. Friday this week, Dazzler. It's my most hated week. I hate it. I know you always say, but we should be embracing this. Yeah. I get all that, but I hate it. I don't like it. Bowls have found a bit of form. Is this a bad time to be playing them, or does their result on Friday make it the best time to be playing them?
I think it's a good time to be playing them, but I would think there is that feeling of if we're winning after 90 minutes, whatever stoppage time will be there will be absolute hell and misery. And I think it nearly becomes a psychological thing of once you've done something a few times, you start to think you'll do it every time. So I think a game like that, scoring early and scoring more than one is probably going to be vital to settle it, because they'll come into the game. You'll see it. You'll predict it. It won't surprise anyone. They'll get better. They'll probably perk up around 75, 80 minutes, no matter what happens for the whole rest of the game. So I think it's brilliant. I think I'd rather the jeopardy gives it a bit of meaning. The jeopardy gives it a little bit of a bit more spice, because I think the last time we played them, there was nearly a feeling of and they weren't bad when we played them, but they feel like a different animal now. If they feel like the team that we should have played earlier in the season. Like, you look at their squad, they're where they should be. They're having results that squad should be having.
Yeah, that's probably a fair point. I think they obviously scored so late in Sligo, and I do think even if they draw there, it might have just derailed them a little bit or slowed them up a little bit. But I don't know with this one. It's so strange. There's loads of needle in it, obviously, with the nonsense that went on last year. And I suppose what I'm trying to say is, has this one dropped below Pats for you?
No, never will.
Correct answer. That was a test and you just passed it. Congratulations.
Now, this is the game. Going back to when Nutsy was our manager and Kenny was their manager, this was the biggest game in Irish football at the turn of the century. Obviously, us and Pats, depending on the age group or what vintage you are, maybe Pats is your big game. But for me, this is it. It's always been Bows. Bows were I suppose, a threat to the existence of Shells. Like, Bowes getting Daily Mount could have been the thing that that ruined Shells. So, yeah, this, for a million different reasons, this is the fixture.
We started with the two up against Pats. I like it. I think we look better that way. Would you be expecting similar, or do you maybe need to be a little bit more cautious going to Daily Mount?
It's hardly been a fortress over the years. Like, they've had good results, but, you know, some of them have been in Tallaght. They've still probably only won 3 or 4 games in the last 12 months in Daily Mount, if I'm not mistaken. So I wouldn't... Where you play them is probably not massively relevant. Like, it's horses for courses. I do think that, are we playing the formation and setup we're playing now because it's the best way to play, or are we playing it because we're playing to who we have available, like what's at our disposal? I do think that we certainly do look a bit stronger with two up top, but I don't know if I know enough to make a counterpoint about it, if you know what I mean.
None of us know anything, Dazzler. You listen every week. You know this better than anyone. Nobody knows anything. This is just, you know.
The people that say they don't know, I respect more. Like, there's constantly, I have a conversation with one person, usually, oftentimes, a few times a month, and they'll try to have a conversation about tactics. I just don't care. Like, it's nothing to do with me. You can tell me that you think this about our taxi, you think that, doesn't bother me. I'm not going to change it. So, like,
well, like, what? So are we done?
Like,
is that...
Well, yeah, I don't know.
I agree. The whole obsession everybody has with tactics and with shape and just being so obsessed with everything. Like, what is wrong with just going to a game and just, I don't know. I prefer the more simple time. People would cheer a tackle. They'd, you know, celebrate a goal, give out a bit of stick, and, like, let that be it. Now you've, like, people from the crowd, and it's everywhere. I'm not just having a pop at, like, Tolkien or anything, but everywhere it's people shouting things like, oh, we need to break the thirds, break through the lines. Ah, will you fuck off? Have a point, relax.
My favorite one, and it kind of goes back to that whole thing of a little knowledge is dangerous with the wrong person. Like, I saw there was people like, oh, Evan Caffrey is right footed but playing on the left, and Tyreek Wilson's left footed but playing on the right, and then they scored when this was happening. It's like, but they scored, neither of those players were involved. JJ Under hit a pass and Pat's won the ball back high up the pitch.
See what you've done there.
What? What?
I may have been there for that.
No, but wasn't the only one. Like, there were other people that made that point. And yeah, it's a great point, but it's kind of redundant. I remember many, many years ago, we played Germany in the Aviva in an international, and someone in the press box was doing their coaching badges and fancied themselves as a bit of a coach. On the lift on the way back down, they were like, oh, he never should have taken off Keith Fahey when we were playing Germany. You know, he was bossing his quadrant and he was finding angles and blah, blah, blah. And someone from the back of the lift made the point that we were 5-1 down when he came off. I don't think it made that much of a difference. And again, it just reinforced to me that a little knowledge is dangerous, because just because you sound like you know what you're talking about doesn't mean you do know what you're talking about.
That's a very good point. So basically, your mum's a spoofer is what you're saying.
I just think people can get too bought into the stuff. Like, at the end of the day, people are running around. Like, there's 11 individual personalities that can be concentrated. They can have brain farts. They can have moments of genius, moments of madness. You can do your best to play a certain way or do a certain thing. But the game is often decided by someone just doing something that they're not meant to do. Like, John O'Sullivan just bulldozing through.
Well, you know what? Like, I have his name written here in my notes for, and it literally says, John O'Sullivan made something happen. And that's all it was.
But you'll have some agents who'll tell you, why is Duffer playing three at the back? What if he plays four at the back? And then we'll have an extra man for the midfield overload. We need three in midfield, not two. Shut up, like. Shut up.
I do happen to feel that John O'Sullivan, technically it's not an assist, but one for the status, that goal involvement, I think that could be his Dean Williams moment this year. You know the way people, like, John's obviously not playing as much as he'd probably like to, but he contributes so much when he comes in. And, like, something so, what looked mundane as just a little dribble into the box, causes a bit of carnage, leaves a space for Kerr, who I did get into the question box. Conor Lackey just said, Kerr McInroy is the best in the league. Be careful. You might offend people in Tala with talk like that, but at this moment in time, he probably is. Like, who's a better midfielder than him?
I find this conversation so strange. Like, player who's been playing really well and is regarded by everyone who's watched him play is playing really well, even when sometimes we're not playing really well. Like, he's been our best player this season. He's been in the team of the week, irrespective of our results. Like, it'd be different if we were winning every week. You'd say, they have to put someone in, they're winning every week. But even when we're not winning, when we went maybe four or five games without a win, he's been in the team of the week for 33% of the season.
That's bizarre.
One for your statos. Like, like, I just don't understand. Like, I mean, the offense, just say Matt Healy's the best if you think Matt Healy's the best. Say Chris Forrester's the best if you think Chris. Like, it's all so subjective. How could you get angry at someone's opinion just because it's different to yours? And not just get angry, but get, like, condescending and uppity. It's like, oh, no, my opinion is right because, I don't know, Glenn Cronin's my friend. Shut up.
People are mad. But I had a first today, and I'm raging, no offence, but I'm raging Ben's not here for it because I think he would have enjoyed it.
Wow.
I got my first opposition supporter getting into the question box, giving out. He's a Pats fan, and he was giving out yards about us not putting the ball out when Chris Forrester was down.
People like that shouldn't be allowed to attend football matches.
No.
I fundamentally don't understand how football works.
It's bizarre. We had this out in Tala with Rovers as well. It's not a head injury. Yeah,
arrogance.
He was obviously injured, and yeah, he went off injured. But, like, that's not up to us to put the ball out. If the ref really wants it, he stops it. So, like, get over it. Move on. Stop moaning. You got beaten with a last-minute winner and then had to stand there and listen to generational golden. Just move on. Park it and get on with your life.
Intergenerational golden. There were old men and young kids doing so. I don't understand that mentality. Like, for too long, we were nice. They're Shells. Shells are nice. I nearly pity Shells. They used to be a big club, and now they're minnows in the first division. And now we have a bit of bite about us. Now we're kind of sticking people's noses in it. We're unapologetically Shelburne again, and people are upset by that. We've always annoyed people. Yeah. We've always annoyed people.
We've always been bastards.
Yeah, but now you're upset because we're not even doing anything upsetting. It'd be different if we didn't stop the ball with a head injury and just played on. That's different. Or if the ref tried to stop the game, we just ran away from him or took his cards or blew his whistle or gave him a wedgie. But, like, we're not doing anything bad here. Like, this whole thing, Chris Forrester's down, it's a serious injury. But who cares? Like, if the ref doesn't deem it serious enough to stop, neither should Shells.
No.
Had the same in Tala. Put the ball out. What?
Oh,
what?
You said it. That was an arrogance thing. How fucking dare you not put the ball out, even though we had a chance to put it out ourselves? Stop.
I have many things to say about Tala, but I won't. But it's a sign that when they don't respect us, probably because there is a little bit of a fear and a bit of an unease. And I think if they did like us and if they were friendly and welcoming, that there's nothing worse. There's a softness there. And probably is no surprise that it's got a little bit niggly because they see us as genuine threats now because they'd be foolish not to.
Yeah. Reds Independent, or well, more specifically, BC from Reds Independent said he enjoyed Friday immensely. Didn't we all? Al asked, lads, if you could look back over all of the players we've lost in the Duffer era, who is the one that you'd want to bring back?
Sean McSweeney.
Stan for me.
He
did actually say, not including Will Jarvis or Gav Malloy, they're too obvious. So that straight away for me, it's Jack Moylan, isn't it? Has to be.
Ah, it's Moylan all day. It's always Moylan. Even before you said we can't bring back Jarvis and Gav Malloy, I was saying Moylan. Jack was, and he is still, like, he was kind of that personification of, he was the first Duffer player, someone that came in as a bit of an outcast, written off. People weren't really excited by it, but by God, he turned it all on his head by just working hard, bringing quality, genuinely getting an affinity and an affection for the club. And, you know, there's, sometimes you'll have players that get shelled and they nearly carry themselves as Shells fans. And sometimes you'll have brilliant players that they leave Tulk and that's them gone. They never really got into it. Jack was one of them that you felt that he saw himself as a Shells fan. He saw something about that where people are written you off. You want to prove them wrong. Because that's been Shells for 20, 30 odd years.
You're right what you say. Some people just kind of fit in and they just settle so seamlessly into it. Luke Byrne would be another one that had jumped to mind. Mark Coyle, just something about them. They're just in and there's no getting rid of them, really. Like, Jack still, when he can, arrives back. But Dazzler, it's time. I'm banking on you to launch a few rockets here. The Richie Rankins. Ben has sent me on his Richie Rankins, so I will give them shortly. I'm going to just go straight in. I'm giving my Richie Baker again to Conor Cairns, because after giving it to him last week and just basically saying, look, don't get away from what he actually does and what he actually is, he was unbelievable on Friday. Unbelievable. The amount of saves the man made in the first half was just incredible. Could have been two or three down. We weren't. Got us in at halftime. And we go on to do what we did. So, I think it's the first time I've ever done it, but has to be Conor Cairns again for the Richie Baker. Hit me with yours.
Conor Cairns is an unbelievable choice. Like, if you search on Twitter the words Conor Cairns and save, like, you will actually get a sense for how important he's been to us. Like, I couldn't really understand some of the... You'd understand it from people outside the club trying to unsettle or upset a player or have a little bit of a pop. But I couldn't really understand people inside, like, Shells fans questioning Connor's form. Like, he's probably made four mistakes in 4 years, if even. And not all of them were, like, game-changing or game-costing mistakes. Like, that's a... unbelievable level of consistency. And in that time, I'd say at a conservative, he's probably denied 20 goals. At a very conservative estimate. Like 20 match changing, game shaping saves. And there were times where in the run in last year, you know, there could be two or three of them a game. So I think he's fully deserved. I think he was brilliant on Friday. I thought he was brilliant in Talla. I think there probably has been a little bit too much made about his form. And I think if we weren't the champions, it wouldn't be a talking point. I think it's probably easy to hone in on you when you're the goalkeeper of the year playing for the champions. Everyone will scrutinize everything you do and everything will be under a microscope. But I think he's been brilliant for us this season, and I don't really buy into a lot of the talk or some of the punditry around Connor's form in recent weeks.
No, it's nonsense and spoof. So you going Conor Cairns or Richie Baker as well?
No, I'm going to give my Richie Baker, it's an eponymous award this week. I'm going to give it to Richie Baker.
Oh, it was amazing, wasn't it?
Like there's times where if you've ever done commentary, you want to talk, but you want to say the right thing, but you also want to say something, and then you don't say anything, which isn't great. But then there's times where you don't even know you're saying something. And I guarantee you, when Richie Baker was screaming and celebrating, he didn't realize sound was coming out of him until probably got home and looked at the tape. Richie has been brilliant. Like, what a player he was for so many people who grew up in the early noughties. Richie Baker was like your favorite player, the person you aspired to be. So he's back at Talca now as a fan. And it's like amazing to see someone who would have given so much joy as a player getting so much joy from the current crop. Brilliant on commentary, by the way. And he's a stand-up fella to boot. And anytime I see Richie Baker, I just enjoy a little chat because there's definitely a bit of hero worship there. So I'm giving it to Richie Baker for how much he enjoyed that winner.
Well deserved. And as you said there, it's mad. Was it you? Somebody was telling me that he was kind of coming out of the tunnel, Richie was, and he said, fucking hell, this place just sucks you right back in. And you can actually notice it in his commentary that at the start he was very, like, prim and proper and kind of didn't get too partisan. But now, like, geez, the noises that came out of him there on Friday just sounded like everyone else in the ground. It's unbelievable. It's great. Ben texted me earlier with his Richie rankings. So I'm just going to read out the text he sent me. I've had to take some bits out, of course, but he said, I wanted to be known that John O'Sullivan was my Richie Baker for his hilarious Lightning McQueen sounds in the warm down. And Stephen Kenny is my Richie Winter because in his interview, he said Anang didn't have a save to make. But Stephen, how can that be? He conceded two goals. Wally. That's what the text said. So
Mark Coyle shot bound for like the roof of the net that he tipped over the bar. Was that not safe?
There was lots of other stuff. Just nonsense. That was just a man who had been beaten and was fuming and started saying mad stuff. What I did really enjoy...
He didn't say anything, dude. All he said was the word, you know, repeatedly, about 974 times. You know, Declan, we came and Joseph and I, you know, he hasn't had no shot to save, really.
This style of my week coming on here, you know. There's something about when you come on here, it turns into like 11 o'clock Fagans having a couple of pints kind of talk, and I just don't know why, but and you're the most professional of any of us, but however,
evidently not. I just did a very derisory Stephen Kenny impression, you know.
Ben mentioned John O'Sullivan. Some people will have seen TikTok. Some people won't because they're very against it. But there was a hilarious TikTok. I don't know the full story behind it. Obviously, some Pats fan was getting very, very rattled. And whoever basically looks after the TikToks put out an absolutely epic one of John O'Sullivan making Lightning McQueen sounds. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know if many would have did, but I had my fun. That's all that really matters. You're Richie Winter, Dazzler. This is where it gets good. I'm expecting big things here.
Oh, who do I give my Richie Winter to? Like, I'd like to give it to... I don't want to give it to the person I want to give it to because he's kind of annoying and he'd probably enjoy being given the Richie Winter for some kind of clout. But Andrew Lanigan is a strange, strange fish. Like, I don't want to be too cruel because, you know, he's only a young chap, but like, I just don't understand this humiliation kink where, you know, you go on the internet and you say really, really extreme football takes that like don't stand up to scrutiny, that just embarrass you and just invite people to call you a dope. And then when they get exposed for being complete shite, then you end up making yourself look like a dope. And I don't think people like that realize, like, football's a strange world. Like, saying stuff like that can end up getting to the person that you least expect it. And I'm not saying it ends up on the back of dressing room doors, but like, I just don't understand what you're trying to do there. There's no way Pats fans look at that and think, yeah, he's not making a show of us.
Yeah, it's something we've managed to avoid it really so far, having like a really out there kind of social media melter. I think we've done quite well in that regard. There's obviously the sandwich making gimp, but like, yeah, I would think we've done quite well to avoid any kind of. Some people put some mad stuff up, but nothing to that degree. I fully endorse that, Richie Winter. My one is,
well, I have a joint one because I don't want to really give it to him.
All right, okay, right.
He's a strange kid, and he might actually enjoy it because he's a humiliation kink. I lost my train of thought there. Tim Clancy. I don't know whether this is Richie Winter or Richie Baker behavior, but just, we've all been tempted at some stage in our life to be like, you know what, stick this job up your hole. I'm done with it. Yeah, Clancy just did it.
I know there's a bit of nonsense going on down there. I think it's about the assistant manager or something. He still doesn't have an assistant, and like, oh, I don't know. They seem to be an awful basket case, Cork. They're just a disaster waiting to happen. It's pretty funny, to be honest. But, yeah, that's Tim Clancy that's gotten the nail Richie Winters a couple of times, to be fair to him.
I don't know. Is that Richie Baker behaviour, though? Just saying, you know what? Stick this job. What's the worst job you ever worked, Duty?
Oh, I had it. Right, I've had two pretty bad ones. One was just, I worked in a centre, but the bleeding thing ended up getting robbed really late at night. And basically some fella came in, all balaclavaed up, and swung a hatchet at me to open the fucking cash register. So that was pretty bad. But worse than that, somehow, I worked as a general operative in the Crow Park Hotel. And let me tell you something. All Ireland Night in the Crow Park Hotel is one of the grimmest scenes you will ever come across. Culgees to beat the band. Like, I mean, wall-to-wall culgees. And you know what my job was for that evening, Dazzler? I had one job. It was replacing the mats underneath the urinals.
Oh, no. And
all I did was do that all night. Go in, roll a mat up, squeeze it out, put it on a trolley, wheel it out the back. Literally rinse and repeat. So, yeah, that was my worst job. What was yours?
I think Tim Clancy would rather do that than manage Cork for the same things. Dermot Usher probably supplied those mats.
He probably did, yeah. He needs to work on his urinals because they used to overflow.
My worst, I worked in a phone shop selling phones. I didn't know anything about phones. That was pretty bad. And the shortest job I had was I worked in a pub for 4 hours.
In town?
It was in, do you know where Temple Street Hospital is?
Yes.
Do you know the big church there?
Yes.
I used to be a disco, a rave. And there was probably junior night 2003. Jesus young Christ. Enough, 2004, and I was collecting glasses. It was an old man pub, meant to be a quiet night, but whatever happened, like, some of the posh kids from Belvo had bought their tickets for their junior. They were queuing in.
Oh, no.
It was sold out. I think Mark McCabe of Maniac fame was the DJ on the night, and people who didn't have tickets came and stole and beat up the people who did have tickets. So these lads, who probably never anyone said boo to in their life, we're getting battered by people from, I'd say, most of the flats in the general north inner city area. And they retreated to the nearest pub for safety, which was the pub I had started working in 45 minutes before that. And it was just carnage. Like, just lads running in, getting battered in a pub, a load of old men. We're like, ah, here, leave it. Oh, yeah, I left, didn't go back.
I wonder why.
I worked in an internet cafe before the internet was invented. Bebo hadn't been invented. MySpace hadn't been invented. Basically just a place for a French man to watch pornography.
Jeez, I didn't see that coming. That's blindsided me.
That's what I said.
My Richie Winter's going to be pretty mundane now after that. Did I give you a Richie Winter already? No, I didn't. Or did I? Maybe I did. But it's Joe Redmond.
Why?
Did you not see him walking off after the game?
No, what did he do?
Oh, he done this weird thing. Look, you get beaten in Tolga. You do that walk of shame into the tunnel. It used to be way worse when the new stand was open, to be fair. But you do that walk past the riverside, past the people queuing, waiting for the tunnel to be pulled back in. It's a pretty grim old walk. Like, we're always standing there. Like, you get a lot of stick. But he kept stopping and, like, staring back over into the crowd. And he was chewing his chewing gum and he was being real aggressive and, like, kind of snarling over into the crowd. And you're going, what are you going to do? Honest to God, get into the tunnel, just take your loss, get into the dressing room, get out of there. Standing there like a hard man, chewing your chewing gum at a bunch of kids, bizarre stuff. Absolutely mental. Severe head loss is what I would say.
Less time angrily ogling people and more time defending, Joe.
Yeah, exactly. Would serve you an awful lot better. Anyway, I always end up getting angry at the end of this podcast. Dazzler, I think that's it. Anything else to mention? Anything going on in Shelburne world that the people need to know about?
No, I don't think there's anything else wild or exciting. Game Friday, game Monday. Game Monday's massive. Playing an awful lot of Monday games. I know it's hard for people, but if you can get down, please do. Bring a buddy. Hopefully they'll enjoy it and then come back.
Simple world, really. Very, very simple. Dazzler, thank you very, very much for giving up your evening.
Thank you, Duty.
And we'll talk to everyone on Friday.
Up the Reds.
You're bleeding lucky you said that.
Why?
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.